Worried about letting someone else pick out the perfect avocado for your perfect impress them on the third date guacamole? Well, good thing Instacart shoppers are as picky as you are. They find ripe avocados like it's their guac on the line. They are milk expiration date detectives. They bag eggs like the 12 precious pieces of cargo they are. So let Instacart shoppers overthink your groceries so that you can overthink what you'll wear on that third date. Download the Instacart app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
You can now relive the best moments of the UEFA Champions League 24/7. The UEFA Champions League channel is a new 24-hour streaming channel serving nonstop goals, highlights, and full match replays from the world's most prestigious club competition. Reminisce on your favorite moments, legendary players, and brilliant goals with the UEFA Champions League channel streaming around the clock on Pluto TV and the CBS Sports app.
Welcome back to another episode of the Helium Boys podcast, a serious, non-serious USC podcast. I am your host for this episode, Chris Trevino. I'm joined by Shotgun Spratling, the man, the myth, the legend. I don't know if you can tell the difference, but I have a silky new microphone, and I hope it is tickling your earbuds right now because I sound great on my end, Shotgun. I don't know if it's if you notice the difference. I'm hoping the listeners can notice the difference since my mic broke three episodes ago. We've been having to use crappy in-computer microphone. Now I have this new one. Shout out to Ryan for purchasing this for me. It is so nice, Shotgun. It is very heavy. I could kill somebody with this if I wanted to use it as a weapon, but I just want to know, can you hear a difference?
All right. Well, people need to let us know in the comment section. I think I hear a difference, Chris, but I'm also not one of those people with the defining ear to be able to tell all the difference in those type of things. It's not my strength. I don't smell well. I don't hear specifically great.
You're also colorblind.
So, yeah.
You're terrible.
It's all about observation rather than anything that I'm actually feeling myself. But we got to talk about spring game, right? Are you excited about this, Chris?
Absolutely.
How did you feel on the field being back out there and being back in the Coliseum? I was jealous. I didn't get to get out there with you guys. A little bit disappointed that I wasn't able to get out just because there's a lot of action going on, a lot of interceptions going on, a lot of recruits going on, it looked like.
Well, hold on there, Sailor. I see what you're trying to do. You're trying to ruin my two-minute drill. So I'm not going to fall for that. I'm not going to fall for that trick. And actually, I'm going to reverse Uno card it because actually you're up for 2 minute drill. So we're going to get to see what your thoughts are. I didn't actually see you tweet at all about this game. So I'm really interested us getting into the stock ups and stock down. Yes, stocks are back for this episode because we had an actual sort of kind of game. So we can officially do stocks. So we're going to do that. So I'm interested to hear what Shotgun thought. I'm interested to hear what his 2 minute drill is because, again, I have no idea what he's going to say. I have no idea what his thoughts are. He hasn't said anything. This is the first time you're ever going to hear a Shotgun thought on the 2024 spring game. If I could just find my gosh dang stopwatch, because I always do this. Okay, I have it. Are you ready?
Sure.
Ready, set, go.
So you did not see me tweet because I was out covering baseball. But normally I would record the game. I would come home. I would watch it over three or four times. Now I did watch the game three or four times. However, I could not record it because it's on the Pac-12 Network and only on Pac-12 Network LA. I have Pac-12 Network LA as part of the Go channels on the Xfinity, which you can't record, which makes no sense to me. But because of that, I have watched your highlights, your field level highlights, much more than I actually watched much in the game, because also they kept showing interviews and showing the game in this little tiny screen. The biggest thing I want to point out about this whole ordeal for me is that this is the last time USC will be on the Pac-12 Network. I think everyone is excited about that and the fact that they will be moving to the Big Ten Network, the fact that the Big Ten Network is, you know, is boosted by Fox and their relationship there. So I didn't get to watch the game as in-depth as I would like to. I will say that. I did still watch it 3 or 4 times. You know, every time I would see it coming on you know, the upcoming listing, I would watch it. I could not record it, so I couldn't, you know, specifically watch one player over and over and over like I wanted to. So, unfortunately, I feel like I can't overanalyze the spring game, which is probably a positive, Chris, because I did not come away super sold on anything from the defense, from the offense. There were 4 interceptions, but the quarterback play wasn't great. There were the biggest thing to me, and I'll spend my last couple seconds on, is that I thought the defense played with more confidence. And that's probably the biggest takeaway that I will have from the spring game, is that there was more confidence. They seemed to know what they were doing, and they seemed to fly around a little bit more than they have in the past. So that's where I'll stop.
Shotgun, beautifully done. Beautifully done. I also love that you spent, more than 50% of that 2-minute drill just crapping on the Pac-12 Network. So
oh, yeah.
Bravo to you. Bravo to you. And just want to point out those highlights were shot by 5 stars only JP. So I wanted to give him,
gotcha.
I just edited them and put it up. So I just want to give the credit where credit is due. We had our photographer that was supposed to be there, couldn't be there. So I had to pivot to photograph duty, which I know I can't compete with Shotgun, but someone had to do it. I needed to get some images. So JP, we were going to split filming, but he just took over all that like a champ. So shout out to him. And yeah, the Pac-12 Network, I had multiple security guards give me crap because they gave us the media vests and they still have Pac-12 on them. And they were like, oh, is this on the Pac-12? I thought there's going to be a Big Ten. So I had multiple security guards like poke fun at me. It's like, guy, I didn't pick the media vest today. I don't know. I don't know anything about that.
Yeah, we'll see new branding on the field, on the courts, on the, you know, on the stadiums, all that stuff going forward. You'll see US on new branding on all that type of stuff, all the media vest, all the stuff in the press box. All that will come though, because USC does not officially enter the Big Ten until July 1st, I believe is the date. So until then, still some Pac-12 stuff going on. There's still the spring sports are still participating in the Pac-12. You know, baseball team is in the midst of the Pac-12 schedule, all those type of things. The track team is still competing. We'll be trying to compete for a Pac-12 championship. All that still going on. But Chris, now it's time for your 2 minutes. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Your 2-minute drill starts now.
Shotgun, to answer your initial question that you tried to trick me into answering before my actual 2-minute drill about the sidelines, being on the field, what I saw down there. Yeah, it was a lot of fun just to be back on the sideline of a USC game. You know, it's been several months since I was at the Petco Park with the Holiday Bowl, which was a lot of fun to cover because USC just came out and throwing haymakers at Louisville, had 6 touchdown passes from Miller Moss. Defense had some swagger, and it was nice to see that momentum carry over through the spring, you know, getting coaching from all these new coaches on the defensive side of the ball, Dantillin in that install. It was a party, basically, on the defensive sideline. I started out covering the game on the defensive side of the ball, just had a hunch, like, I'm just going to stick to my normal side. Offense was on the other far side. They were having so much fun. I almost felt bad for the offense because every time I looked over, they were like all sad. 4 interceptions, 4 turnovers in general, but just a lot of swagger from the defense, a lot of smiles, a lot of, obviously it's just the spring game and it's not like they went out and did this against, you know, an LSU that would have really, you know, lifted that albatross that's been hanging on this defense since last season. But just to get that momentum with this unit, you know, they're still building. There's still a lot to do. They have a lot of things they need to address between now and that opening kickoff. They need more interior defensive linemen. They have to go out and get those guys in the spring portal, which we'll talk about in a little bit. But there, you still see some deficiencies with this team, especially on this defense. But just to go out there, you know, that secondary, I think we were all really impressed by the secondary. And I think we thought it was going to be a strong point of the season just with Doug Belk and Danton Lynn being a safety coach by trade. I'm not shocked that they, you know, had such a good outing, you know, four interceptions. I wasn't expecting that. But overall, I think it's a nice little tip in the cap for the defense, a nice little building block going to the summer and then obviously into fall camp.
Oh, look at that pause to end it at 2:02, Chris. 2:02.
I see the 2 minute. I see the 2 minute I ended, no matter where it is. No matter where it is. Maybe I had a couple more words at the end there, but it kind of ended there just on it died on the vine there.
Shotgun. Okay.
2 minutes. I hear the 2 minutes.
Well, Chris, let's
with
go
that.
Let's jump in.
No,
you're hosting.
I'm hosting. What are you doing? Get out of my lane. Get out of my lane here. You're putting off hosting duties for 5 weeks. One host and you think you're hosting the Oscars now.
I probably should be hosting, because you were able to see more in this. You were able to, you know, take more observations than I was. I just am living vicariously from reading all your guys' stuff, as well as, you know, as I said, watching the game a couple times on the Pac-12 Network. But, you know, your ghost notes were fantastic, as always. If you're not a member of the Peristyle, like, you should sign up just for Chris's game day ghost notes. It is the elite stuff. You get all the behind the scenes, all the down the sideline stuff. You know, JP and I, when we're there, we will contribute, you know, Connor and Ryan, you know, we all make contributions to the game day ghost notes. It ends up being during the season, ends up being a 2,500, 3,000 word, essay on what all has happened, transpired on the day of a game, which is elite stuff. So, if you're not a member, you should sign up. I think we have a 50% off sale right now, Chris, for all new annual memberships. So, you know, if you're not a member, sign up, become a 24/7 sports member, and you'll get all of our great stuff, plus the rest of the network, so much good stuff. So, but I had to give you a shout out because I was craving it. You know, you were like, oh, are you going to read this? I know it's spring game. I'm like, hell yeah, I'm reading this. This is what I want to read after a game.
No math expert, but 50% off. I think that's half. So I think that's a good deal. And yeah, I appreciate you always editing them because I write so much. There's obviously bound to be stuff I miss in there. But I appreciate the master editor that you are. But enough patting each other on the back. It's time to get into stocks, Shotgun. I'm really curious to see what stocks you're going to throw at me today and these fans today and these listeners today, but let's start with stock ups. And what do you got? What are you leading off with? What's your first offering? What's your first pitch here, Shotgun?
I mean, I think you got to start with the cornerbacks just as overall as a unit. And if I was going to single out one of them, I think Marcellus Williams, we heard a lot about him throughout the spring. You know, people have been talking him up the last couple of weeks, but sounds more and more like he could really be in that competition. Seemed like, hey, he gets a guy that maybe they'll try to get a series here or there early in the season type of thing, versus now, like, he might be full rotation member, you know, similar to the way Jacoby Covington was used with DeMai Jackson at times in the past. I think Jacoby Covington is going to lock down one spot. And I think John Humphrey, obviously, when he's back healthy, is the other starter there. But Marcellus Williams, maybe they see flashes, or have seen enough flashes that they say, we want to get this guy in there every game. We want to get him one or two drives. We want to get him, you know, at least that at minimum. And maybe we want to get him even more, you know, every third drive he comes in for one of the cornerbacks or something like that. And I thought DeCarlos Nicholson had an interception. I thought that he was sticky in his coverage. I just thought in general, the cornerbacks were much stickier. There weren't giant gaps, wide open receivers. Now, there were some nice catches made. There were some open guys over the middle. But as far as on the outside, the cornerbacks were pretty much there. Now, vanilla offense, they've probably seen these same plays and practice a ton, so that's going to play into it. But you're still facing some really good wide receivers too. So I was impressed by the cornerbacks, and I thought that they've taken a step forward as a unit. I know that secondary is really deep, but the cornerbacks in particular impressed me.
Yeah, I was also leading with kind of a secondary cornerback kind of one, and that was kind of the length. They're so long out there on the edges. I mean, you didn't have, you didn't have John Humphrey, who was out with that minor surgery on his arm. I'm not sure what it is specifically. Lincoln Riley didn't tell us, but he'll be back for fall. But yeah, just another guy who's like 6'2", 6'3". DeCarlos Nicholson, had that nice little pass breakup to start the game for him. And then that interception. Again, some of those throws weren't great. They were kind of easy for the quarterbacks to make. But, Malachi Crawford, 6'4", he's a guy who's been getting coached really, really hard in the spring. It felt like every day or every practice we would see Doug Belk had some coaching to give him, even if it was, delivered with a yell. So he was getting coached up all spring, a guy who missed all of last year. It's nice to see him go out and have an interception. He is also, as I mentioned, 6'4". You have Jacoby Covington, 6'2", 6'1". There's a lot of length in that cornerback room, and I like it. I like it a lot. I'm still big on Jacoby Covington and DeCarlos Nicholson. I didn't really know what he was going to bring besides that 6'3" frame, and he played well on Saturday. Yeah, I agree with you. Sticky. It's hard to get away from a guy who's 6'3" and can reach out and can make up that distance if they have a beat on you a little bit. Just a game of inches. Just a game of inches, shotgun. If you have that extra little 2 inches, you can make the difference with a pass breakup or a tip ball or get it to your teammate and somehow in the secondary. So that length was noticeable out there, and they'll have even more in the fall when John Humphrey comes back. Just to throw in one of mine, just ball hawks. 4 interceptions on the day. Shotgun, I asked you if they were going to have 4 turnovers to match last year's spring game. You said no. So they were out there to prove you wrong, getting four picks, 5. I know it's considered a fumble, but like that play that Garrett Pomerantz made at the end there, we're tipping that trick play up and then batting in the air and coming down with it. I feel like that should be an interception, even though it's not a throw technically, but 5 turnovers for these guys, 4 through the secondary. Again, we figured the secondary was going to be a really good group for this defense, given the depth and the experience and Danton Lynn being a safety coach by trade and Doug Belk and the background he brings, having coached with Nick Saban and Kirby Smart and coming from that background and that coaching tree. And, they showed up on Saturday and they had a lot of fun and they powered those turnovers with 4 interceptions. And yeah, Marcellus Williams deserves a big pat on the back. I think he was, considered a dark horse for us to play this season and maybe not compete for a starting job, but at least push for that rotation. And he is proving us right through spring camp, made multiple interceptions through spring and then got one on Saturday. And for Max, I had a really fun ghost note about it in my writing. So Max was on the sideline, got to watch that, and it was a good time to be a Williams brother on the field.
Yeah, definitely. When baby brother is out there making plays, I wonder if Max is kind of regretting the fact that he shut it down and said, "Hey, I'm going to be done after this year." Now, would USC have wanted him back? The scholarship, that whole thing would play into it too. But I wonder if he's like, "I wish I could have played with my brother." But he'll be around for sure. You had some of the other guys there. I mean, Jalen Smith was down the sideline, and some of those guys that aren't were not participating. But Kalen Bullock down there, they were. Seemed like they were all hyped up for Marcellus in that one. And, for Max, to see his baby brother down there doing that, it's really fun. Yeah, that one was kind of, it looked like, Miller Moss read a cover 2 and just couldn't get it over Marcellus. And that's one, the length, but that's also him reading and identifying where the receiver is in a zone coverage. That's not something that is usually at the forefront for, freshman DBs. They can often be do man-to-man, but then those zone responsibilities can sometimes be a little bit of more of a hassle to learn at the college level. So that was impressive. I don't want to take away from the interceptions, but and the fact that they were ball hawks, but come on, Malachi Crawford was thrown right to him. DeCarlos Nicholson, all he had to do was turn around. Jacoby Lane didn't even try to break that one up. Marcellus Williams, he didn't make a nice play on it, but it was a very underthrown ball. DeCarlos Nicholson had another one that he knocked away from Jacoby Lane. Should have been a touchdown that Miller Moss underthrew. I was not super impressed by the quarterback play. So that's going to be my stock down, but I don't want to take away from the cornerbacks, but I do have to take away from the ball hawk ability, but I do have to take away from the fact that quarterbacks didn't do enough in this game. Someone who did do enough, Xavier Jordan, I thought he showed out in his opportunities. You know, obviously with the limited number of receivers they have, then he's going to get more opportunities. And I think he's making the most of them. And, you know, that'll be interesting to see if they count on him as being a guy or, you know, or they look at it like, okay, that's a guy that's down the road. So let's get an older vet coming in. You know, that could guide their transfer portal desires at the wide receiver position. You know, if they see Xavier Jordan as a guy who's going to contribute right away, or if he's a guy that is going to, you know, be a next year guy for him. And hey, let's get a rental in here. You know, whether it be a Kyle Ford, whether it be, you know, somebody else to come in and you know, get some reps and take those reps rather than Xavier Jordan. But he showed some burst. I think that was the most important thing there is, you know, I've seen him in high school. In high school, he would disappear in some games, just depending on the play calling and stuff. There were games at, you know, that he had at Sierra Canyon where he would have big numbers, and there were games where he'd have two catches for 18 yards. And you're like, how has this happened? Like, you know, maybe they're not using him right, that type of thing. But it was good to see him have the burst that he showed on Saturday. So he stood out to me out there among the wide receivers, actually.
Xavier Jordan was one of my standouts from the game that I posted last night. Xavier Jordan, or DJ Jordan, he likes to go by DJ at times. I don't know.
He goes by DJ. Xavier. And I asked about it. You know, this I found this out last year, I think before anyone, or 2 years ago. And his, you know, the person that was with him, his handler, his uncle, I don't know exactly who, can't remember who it was. But after a game, I was talking to him and he was calling for DJ. And I was like, DJ? And I was like, he goes by DJ? He's like, yeah, that's what he goes by. And I'm like, do you want me to change it in our database so that he can go by DJ if that's what he's going to be called? And he's like, no, Xavier. I was like, okay, all right. So I don't know. Don't have the full story on why he goes by DJ and why he doesn't want to, you know, go by, doesn't want it to be changed in the official on the roster or anything, because at USC he could have easily changed it as well. And instead it's by Xavier, because we did have some names get changed and we had to adjust our database with some of those names, added some juniors, added some different things and some seconds and thirds and all those type of things that got changed to make sure that we're having the same names as the rosters have, so that, you know, you guys know who you're looking for when we're tagging people in our stories and whatnot.
He wasn't a guy that was grabbing any headlines in spring camp. You know, he's a freshman. You know, he's got to get that adjustment period. He's got a bunch of talented, not older guys, but barely older guys above him. You know, that sophomore class of Zachariah Branch, Deuce Robinson, Jacoby Lane, those guys ahead of him. But you had start to hear that he was kind of coming into his own that final stretch of spring. And then he popped. He popped really well on Saturday, made some good catches, showed off that yards after the catch ability. That's one of the reasons why he made my top performance list. And again, USC has 7 scholarship wide receivers. They need guys, and they're going to get some guys out of the portal, some bodies to fill in that rotation. But Xavier has an opportunity to play as a true freshman. And, you know, he has some special teams ability as well. We saw him, you know, working with returners this spring, so he could also factor into there. Obviously, you have Zachariah Branch, an All-American returner, so can't have too much of an impact there with a guy like that ahead of you. But I think Xavier does bring potential on special teams, and yeah, they need a guy like that with that yards after catch ability. And, you know, he is on track to break that rotation. Nice tip in his cap to end spring, and hopefully he builds that into the summer PRPs, you know, building that chemistry with Miller Moss. And then, you know, hopefully, or, you know, for him, you know, his plan is to break into that rotation and contribute, because they need guys to step up having such limited numbers for this season. You gave me a wide receiver. I'll give you a wide receiver back, but stock up on Mekhi Lemon. I mean, he was the leading receiver in terms of receptions, 6 receptions on 6 targets, caught everything that went his way, had the only touchdown of the wide receiver group, boxing out Prophet Brown there in the end zone from a 17-yard pass from Jaden Maeva. So Mekhi Lemon gets on the board with his touchdown in the spring game. You know, obviously, Zachariah Branch, Deuce Robinson, Jacoby Lane, those are the guys that have dominated the headlines for that wide receiver group. And Mekhi Lemon is just kind of there. But Mekhi Lemon was borderline a 5-star prospect. He is a dog, certified dog. And, You know, he played cornerback last year, flipped up back over to wide receiver, had 75 yards in the Holiday Bowl. I think people are kind of forgetting about him. Got a little banged up this spring, missed a couple practices, but Lemon shows out when the lights are on. When it's a game situation, Mekhi Lemon comes to play. And, you know, with a lot of defenses, I'm assuming are going to be focusing on, you know, those twin towers of Lane and Robinson. And then obviously you have Zach Branch to deal with. I think Lemon could be a huge benefactor of that and just gobble up some passes. These guys are all covered up. Okay, Mekhi Lemon, win your battle, bam, I got you at that outlet pass, or, you know, guy no one's really focusing on. So Mekhi Lemon, they need a person to be that dependable guy that can come through in the clutch to make a catch. And Mekhi Lemon, I think, could be that guy next season. You know, you're losing Taj Washington. Go to the Lemon, baby.
Yeah, I have been a big fan of Mekhi Lemon since, you know, since covering him in high school and stuff. And the first time you see him, just like the fact that he was going both ways in 7-on-7 events. And, you know, he's got that competitive spirit. He reminds me a lot of Amon-Ra St. Brown, similar skill sets there and similar drive, I think. Now, I don't think he's quite as good as Amon-Ra St. Brown, and especially not at this point in his career. But that's who he reminds me of. He's, you know, how Michael Jackson we have referenced as the poor man's Amon-Ra St. Brown. Like, he's at the in-between there. You know, he's just a slightly lower version, and hey, maybe he gets better. He's a faster version of Amon-Ra St. Brown, actually.
I think he's more athletic as well. Yeah. Obviously, Amon-Ra was stronger and just like a supreme route runner in high school, like one of the best route runners you'd seen in high school. So just more technically impressive from that standpoint. And again, stronger. Obviously, they both have really good work ethic, but like Amon-Ra's work ethic is like on another level compared to like guys just coming from that background he does. But yeah, I think Mekhi Lemon, definitely faster, shiftier, and a little bit more athletic, a guy who could have played defensive back in college as well. And, you know, I know Greg Biggins liked him as a DB more at the college level. So yeah, but I see the traits. I see what you're saying, and I agree completely.
I mean, I like him better as a receiver, and I think if he, now that the whole thing with the depth issue at cornerback seems to be sealed up, and especially USC adding another one over the weekend, that he's not about to moonlight over there. Like, if he can focus solely on just receiver, Amon-Ra St. Brown in high school, did he play any cornerback? No, not after his maybe freshman or sophomore year. Like, he was strictly wide receiver, and that's how he got so good at the technical aspects of the route running, all that. So I could see Mekhi Lemon taking off. And like I said, the only thing is, like you mentioned, I don't think I've been around anyone with a work ethic of Amon-Ra St. Brown. So that's the, you know, that's the mountaintop that Mekhi Lemon would have to get to. But I think he has better physical traits than Amon-Ra St. Brown. Now, can he get to the work ethic portion of it? And that's like, that's Hall of Fame level, what Amon-Ra St. Brown has. So, you know, if he can, then I think his game takes off even further. And I think he could end up being the best receiver in that bunch. Like, I just think he has so many, you know, he has such a unique skill set compared to the rest of the group. He's a little bit different than all of them, but he can do a little bit of everything. That he can get that jump ball. He can go up and run the routes. He can be the super shifty guy. He can make guys miss. He is special, but he's got to stay healthy. And that's the other thing. Amon-Ra St. Brown was never banged up, or never let himself be banged up. Even when he was banged up, he wouldn't let himself be banged up. Mekhi Lemon missed a bunch of time as far as, you know, he would miss camps and stuff during the off seasons in high school because he'd be, you know, he'd have hamstring issues, rolled ankles, things like that. And that's partly because of overusage from playing both ways, I'm sure. So I think if he can stay healthy, I just think there's another level his game can go to. And I'm excited to see if it comes to fruition.
I was just going to say, yeah, Mekhi Lemon battled a bunch of little nagging injuries through high school, mm-hmm. but because like Losau would run him into the ground, like he would never take a play off playing both ways. He was their number one cornerback and their number one receiver, you know, for Malachi Nelson, his quarterback. So he got run into the ground. You know, sometimes we complain about like guys not playing at 7-on-7 events and camps and stuff, you know, like, oh, this guy showed up, but he's not working out or he's not playing again. But Mekhi Lemon, it was like, please, rest, please, like don't you don't need to play in this, like we know how good you are, like don't do that. So I was always concerned about his health always in the offseason. I didn't want him to play in any 7-on-7. Like, save yourself for the season, because I know they're going to run you into the ground. So I hope he can get, you know, consistently more healthy. And, you know, he missed some time last year with injuries in practice, and he was limited this year a little bit. So just, you know, managing his health is good, because he's going to go 100% all the time. You cannot slow him down at all. And that's similar to Amon-Ra St. Brown. So just keeping him healthy, and I think he's going to be a really, really good player and a big contributor this season.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to see if they use him on the inside or outside or combination, because like I said, his skill set runs the entire gamut, I think. So, he was good, and, you know, had the only catch. So I definitely could see him on stock up. And if he's healthy, his stock continues to rise for me. I stock up for the reserve running backs. Woody Marks didn't do much. He had a nice catch out of the backfield and run up the sideline. That really wasn't defended very well. But we saw this last year too. Those freshmen will get their opportunities in the spring game. I thought Brian Jackson made the most of his opportunities. He's a guy that we've heard positive things about in the spring, and heard, you know, good things, especially just looking at his body compared to where it was a year ago when we saw him. And so I think that he may be. I think that with the positive things that you've seen from Quentin Joyner and from what you saw from Marian Peterson and Brian Jackson in the spring game is, do you have to have another running back? That becomes a question for the coaching staff. And I think that now becomes a viable question versus we got to go get somebody. And, you know, Tony Jones or Anthony Jones Jr. basically said that, you know, we'll see. Whereas other coaches during the spring were like, yeah, we're going to go Dennis Simmons. We're going in the portal to get a wide receiver. Josh Henson, you know, we're probably going to get a receiver. And Anthony Jones was like, we'll see. We'll see if we need one at running back. And so I think that speaks volumes to the improvement of Quentin Joyner and Marion Peterson, and then the fact that Brian Jackson is further along than we anticipated.
I have something for that for stock down, but I'll save it till that. I'll have stock up on quasi linebackers, a.k.a. Anthony Beavers and Elijah Newby. Because those are kind of two interesting body types. Anthony Beavers, you know, started playing a little more linebacker this season, or this spring camp, excuse me. You know, 6'1", 250 pounds. Yeah, he's kind of a hybrid kind of guy. Been working closely with Taylor Mays. Saw Taylor Mays, like, coaching him up specifically on the sideline. So that's not a bad position coach to have in Taylor Mays, whose stock has risen as a coach. But Anthony Beavers, 4 tackles, one of those 3 tackles for a loss. I think he's been playing really well. You know, that Holiday Bowl, he stepped up, you know, had a big turnover in that game. I think they need to find a way to get him on the field. I know that safety room is stacked, but, you know, I think Danson Lynn will be a guy who can figure out how to get a guy like Anthony Beavers, who brings some versatility to this defense as a hybrid safety, bigger safety, put him in the box, good tackler, which is, you know, one of his traits as a player for this team. And then Elijah Newby, the freshman, one of the team leaders in tackles with 5, was flying all around. We knew he had that speed. We were excited to see it, and you saw it. You know, he had a nice little QB pressure coming up the middle, and I think he was the one who accidentally hit one of the quarterbacks, got there too fast and kind of bumped into them. He's like, it's on me, guys. It's on me. So you never want to touch the quarterbacks, but I think it just showed what kind of speed he has getting in the backfield super quick. So Elijah Newby popped to me on and again, just a unique body type, 6'3", 215 pounds as well. Also can be in that hybrid kind of role. He can drop into coverage as well. Bigger, faster linebacker. So those guys get my stock up for quasi linebackers.
The question becomes, can you put everyone in their best position? Do you trust the coaching staff to be able to do that? When you have hybrid guys, they, you know, a poor coaching staff will say, we're going to put you here. This is what this position needs. This is what you got to do. An elite coaching staff says, this is the position you're in. However, this is how we're going to manipulate it to fit your skill set. And that's going to be a question for Beavers, for Newby, for Eric Gentry. Those tweener guys that don't fit the exact mold, and that is a challenge for a coaching staff. You look at someone like Eric Gentry, if you're recruiting him, you go, ooh, what could be? But then you also go, how exactly would that work? Can we make it work? And some coaches will shy away from that and just say, it doesn't really fit the way I do things, so it's not going to be worth the time to try to do it. Danton Lynn takes over, and Elijah Newby is a new commit that they got. But the other guys, they're already on the roster. These weren't his guys. So I'm curious to see, once they get into actual, games, are those guys they use? Eric Gentry's on the second team right now. Anthony Beavers is on the second team right now. That's the teams they're with. Is it going to be, when you get into a game, it's going to be, well, we're going to use Mason Cobb, and we're going to use Easton Mascarenhas Arnold because those guys fit the more traditional linebacker role? Or are you going to see some variations? You're going to see some different packages. I'm curious to see if that happens. Because those are not guys that Danton Lynn recruited himself, it makes me hesitant to say, yes, he's definitely going to do that. I am enticed and intrigued by the opportunity for that to happen because I think they can be elite playmakers. And we've been big Anthony Beavers fans for, 6 years now or so? Because he always makes plays. When he's in there, he always makes plays. When he was at Narbonne, he made plays. When he gets his opportunities in the couple of games where there have been guys injured or whatever, he's made plays. Now, is he your traditional safety over the top? Is he Kalen Bullock flying around as a free? No, that's not him. He needs to be in the box, and they have done some different things with him in the past and used him that way in goal line situations and different things like that, heavier packages. And he would make some plays there. But he showed that he can play and be a every down guy in the Holiday Bowl. Now, are you going to use him in that same role if they used him in the Holiday Bowl? No, but and the question becomes, who do you use? Because the depth is so much more. And those guys are intriguing, but I'm curious to see, once you get into the season, if you're like, yeah, we got to design different things for those guys, well, let's just stick with our base stuff. Or they're going to try to figure out ways, like, this guy just makes plays, we got to get him on the field. So that's what I love those guys. And I'm super intrigued by them when they're on the field. But I'm also not designing the plays and trying to figure out how best to use them and how to get them on there. Because if you don't use them in the right way, they quickly become liabilities. If you get into a defense and you're asking Eric Gentry to be your traditional Mike linebacker, and you're asking Anthony Beavers to be over the top as the free safety, like, you're going to get torched. And we saw that a lot the last couple of years in different areas. Max Williams getting thrown on a 6'7" tight end. Hey, you got a one-on-one coverage. I think it'll work. So, Max Williams can do a lot of things for you, but you got to use them the right way. And so that's something that I'm very curious to see. I love those hybrid guys, and I'm excited to see them, but I'm a little afraid at the same time. And granted, I do trust Danton Lynn more than I do Alex Grinch, just from seeing the results that he had with UCLA, but it's also a small sample size in one season. So I'm a little frightful there, Chris, I will say.
How dare you disparage Braylon Shelby at cornerback? How dare you?
And Drake Jackson. And, that's a tough position, that edge rusher who you're going to drop into cover. It's hard to do and be both of those things. And you don't want to do it too often. And sometimes you want to do it to trick the offense with a zone blitz or something. But can you find the right guy for that? And if that's not in the skill set, then don't do it. Don't. But this is what works best in my defense. You don't have the right guy to do it, then don't do it. Run a base cover two, and you'll be have a much better chance of making a play with guys doing their normal routine than asking Braylon Shelby or Drake Jackson to cover a running back running a wheel route out of the backfield. So that's the challenge when you take over a new roster too for the coaching staff. I got one more stock up. You got any more, Chris?
I have a couple, but they could be quick ones.
All right, mine's going to be quick, too. It's actually on the basketball side. I put hoop scores because the transfers that have come in so far are all guys that can put the ball in the basket. So that's something that at times in Andy Enfield's tenure has been an issue. There would be one or two scores, and if they weren't going, then it became, become a slog at times on the offensive side. They've went out so far, Eric Musselman and his staff, and they've gotten guys that can put the ball in the basket so far, guys that can shoot, guys that can score and find different ways to score. So I'm curious to see how that's going to all unfold eventually when basketball season rolls around as well.
My last two stock ups, just wanted to give a quick stock up to the walk-ons. Wide receiver Josiah Zamora had a couple big catches, including that big one down the field on a free play. And Garrett Pomerantz, who I mentioned earlier, had that blew up that trick play they were trying to pull off, got the fumble as it was recorded. You know, the whole defense swarmed him. Always great to see, you know, a walk-on make a play like that. So just want to give a quick stock up to the walk-ons making some plays there in the spring game. And then just a quick stock up on quote unquote obnoxious communication, which is something that Danton Lynn described as one of the tenets of his defense. You know, was when I was down on the field, I don't know if you could pick it up on the broadcast, but you could just hear so much talking on the field, so much checking in with everybody on the field, specifically Eric Gentry. Like, his voice was constantly in my ear when I was watching on the field, when he was on the field, even on the sideline, he was coaching up guys when they came off. So obnoxious communication, definitely saw a lot of that with the defense. If you just watch them checking in everyone with all three levels, you know, turning to check with the Keely Arnold in the secondary and Easton Mascarenhas and Eric Gentry checking where they needed to be. So just a lot of that going on. And I think that's a big breath of fresh air for, you know, USC fans.
Quickly on the walk-ons, there's a couple of older walk-ons, I guess you would say. Hunter Dunn, who's technically listed as a junior. Brandon Shepherd is listed as a junior. Both those guys were on the third team, and both those guys did some special teams. So don't be surprised if you see them in the fall, especially on special teams, getting some run. You know, those older walk-ons, guys that are listed older, usually they're the ones that get some opportunities. And, you know, I wouldn't be surprised to see those two guys in particular on special teams.
I'm good. Now it's time to move into the stock down. What do you have for me moving down?
I mean, I already mentioned the quarterbacks. I was not super impressed with the quarterback play. You know, there were some throws behind people. There were throws too far inside on outside routes. Even the touchdown to Mekhi Lemon, like the ball placement, I think is probably my biggest issue. The ball placement was not great. And it's not like it was. Was it the 2021 spring game or 2021 spring game where Miller Moss was constantly running for his life, if you remember that one, and the one that Mo Hassan got injured in? Like that one, okay, you make bad throws. I'm not going to blame you because you were constantly under pressure. I thought the offensive line did their job, and you know that's another stock down coming up. But the quarterbacks had times to throw, and you know, we're giving clean pockets and, you know, just the ball placement wasn't great.
No, I think that's fair. I mean, obviously they didn't light the world up. Four interceptions among the three quarterbacks. It's not great. And there was some weird throws and some borderline bad throws. But I don't think it's enough to be like, burn it all down. But it was, it was definitely like weird that you didn't see like some big play throws. It just felt like very like mediocre throws being made. I don't know what it was. It was glorified practice, more or less. I don't know. It was a little weird, but again, I don't think it's anything to be overly concerned about.
Not necessarily, and I'll get to why I'm not that concerned in a minute. But like, yeah, the one that DeCarlos Nicholson knocks away, Jacoby Lane was a step and a half past him. You throw that ball out there, that's a touchdown. Like, those are the type of throws that were not happening in this game. I mentioned the Mekhi Lemon, the touchdown. Like, that throw is too far inside. Now, he makes a great catch and a readjustment there. And you can throw that ball because the cornerback's head is turned, Prophet Brown's head is turned chasing. So you can do that. However, if you put the ball in an elite placement, it doesn't matter. The cornerback has no chance at all. Your wide receiver doesn't have to make a readjustment. Same thing on the Deuce Robinson one. I think it was right before that, where Deuce Robinson, Christian Pierce, give him credit, did a great job of, Deuce Robinson had the ball in his hands, but he had to go up over onto the back of Christian Pierce to get the ball, where if the ball is up higher or the ball is further outside, Deuce Robinson can go catch that and just focusing on getting his feet down. Now, also, maybe a little bit of that is the wide receiver. I would have to rewatch it and have an opportunity to pause it and rewind to do those things, which obviously you can't do with what I talked about earlier with the Pac-12 Network being on go only here. But, you know, that maybe Deuce Robinson could do a little bit more with his route, but you could throw it him open. And there, that's what I had an issue with. There weren't a lot of throwing guys open. There were some guys wide open over the middle. Jake Jensen had a really nice throw to Zamora. Jacoby Lane had that really nice one-handed catch over the middle where there was a pump fake one way and he came back. I believe that was Maiva. So there were some positives you can take away from it, but the ball placement's got to get better if you want to be an elite offense. And that's what Lincoln Riley's offense runs on. And USC fans are, you know, a bit spoiled with Caleb Williams and his ability to, you know, he doesn't miss on a ton of throws. It's very rare that he just overthrows a guy. Quarterbacks do that a lot in college, and Caleb Williams didn't do that very often. The Notre Dame game is probably the one exception, and it started with an overthrow because of pressure in his face. But there are times in college, you see a lot in college where guy just doesn't make a throw. You just chalk it up to being a college quarterback, and hey, overthrew a guy that was open, or he throws a ball at a guy's feet and he has to go down to his knees to catch it, and there's no yards to catch. Caleb Williams was so good at that, such an underrated aspect of his ability. And so that's something that needs to be improved going into the fall to be able to create an elite offense like Lincoln Riley wants.
Yeah, I mean, that's a staple of Miller Moss's game, is that precision and getting the ball there on a dime. And that's something we've seen since high school. So yeah, not seeing that zip was weird and kind of jarring. It's like, this isn't a Miller Moss. Who body snatched Miller Moss here with his arm? I have a stock down on adding another running back. I think this is something that I said I would talk about in the second half of these stocks, but I think you're right about, you know, the young running backs impressing. You know, Woody Marks didn't get a ton of run. Quentin Joyner didn't get a ton of run. But I'm more accepting to the idea of USC not burning a scholarship on bringing in another veteran wide receiver. You could still talk me into it. If they still do it, I'd be like, I think that's a good move. You know, Woody Marks has had some injury issues during his career at Mississippi State. You know, he battled some stuff last season with the Bulldogs. So he has missed time, and USC's starting running back has gone down for at least a couple games the last two seasons. You know, Marshawn Lloyd missed some time. And then we know Travis Dye, you know, had the broken leg and missed the stretch of the season. And you had Austin Jones to fill it up. If Woody Marks goes down, you have three really young guys. I see the value in bringing in another running back, but I'm also like, screw it, roll the dice. I like those four in that room. They've shown a lot of ability. You know, Marion Peterson running over dudes. Brian Jackson, really nice spring game, you know, in his first kind of game action in front of the fans. So if Lincoln Riley and Anthony Jones are confident in rolling with four this season and what they have in that room, then so be it. And so I got stocked down on possibly adding another or using another scholarship on a veteran running back this spring.
I think they need to add someone to the room, but you point out adding one with a scholarship. Like, I think you need a good walk-on at least. Like, I mentioned Matt Colombo in the past, or even blanking on the name, Quincy Junty, you know, when they had to use him a few years back because they had multiple injuries to running backs. You need someone quality enough that you can trust, and Junty's not a great example here, but you need someone to trust that they will not fumble the ball. And so that's the biggest thing. They need to add someone else to that room, but I think it can be a walk-on. Can you find a quality walk-on that you can trust to take care of the ball and run through open holes? We don't need you to do too much. Run through open holes, and hopefully the offensive line is going to create some, you know, and there won't be too much pressure on you to do too much. Can you run through open holes, and can you be in the way to pass block? I think they'd still need a body, though, at least. And now the question becomes, you can't find a great walk-on, do you spend a scholarship? Because the scholarship is pretty limited right now on, you know, the guys they can bring in. I think you had it at five or six. Is that the last count that we have for scholarships? 70,
right
79?
Right now it's, well, with the addition of Greedy Vance is five right now.
So five guys. You're thinking at least two defensive linemen you want to get there. you might even want to just take five defensive linemen if you could get them. But like parsing out those five is going to be difficult. You're going to have wide receiver for sure, and then defensive line for sure for a couple bodies. And then you have to decide, okay, those last two, what do you do with them? If you can get those, if you can fill those other spots up, maybe do you need another receiver? Do you need another running back? You know, where do you feel, is there an offensive lineman that is plug and play? Like, so that's the concern there with the running back is, I think they still need another body, but yeah, I don't know if you need to use a scholarship on a running back because you feel confident enough in them. If that makes sense, where the scholarships are so limited right now, are there more pressing needs? And I think running back, you don't feel that that's necessarily a pressing need at this moment. But I had stocked in on defensive front. Got to go get bodies there. I didn't see anything. I didn't see anything from Nate Clifton. I didn't see anything from the young guys. And hey, I'm not expecting too much from Abasiri or guys like that, or that are on campus for 3 months. But Kobe Pepe, like, I didn't see anything. Again, I didn't get to rewatch everything the way I do like to, but from just in-game viewing, and I would try to watch a certain player on every play, and each time that I rewatch the game, I try to watch a different player on each play. But like, did I miss anything? Did you see something that sparked you? I mean, I know Dejon Lafitte had one tackle for loss, but I saw a lot of times where he's just standing there at the line of scrimmage, not doing anything. Clifton's playing out of position there. He needs to be on the outside. Now, obviously, Barry Alexander did not participate, and that's the big one. And he takes all the pressure off everyone else. But can you find somebody beside him to take the pressure off him? That's the big question. And that was the reason why there was excitement about Rakes, is the fact that he can take up blockers to create opportunities for Barry Alexander. So I think you got to go get one impact guy for sure, two bodies for sure. And then, you know, hopefully you get multiple impact guys that you can rotate, because that I know some fans have poo-pooed the Isaiah Rakes leaving as a big deal, but that's huge in my mind. I know Gerard touched on this in the 2-star composite and really covered it pretty well, but it's huge in my mind because he may not have had a ton of stats. Your nose tackle is not going to have a ton of stats, but his job is to eat up blockers so that other guys can go make plays. And that big body, you know, they didn't have anybody that did that in that game, and no one else went and made plays in that spring game. I call it a game. That's showcase. It's a showcase. If you're not playing regular points, then it's not a game, in my opinion.
Better go drop Jay Toy a bag. Better go do something. You better go find a big body, because they're getting eaten up in this transfer portal, and, you know, you only have 8 more days. So the portal closes, and that's not to say you have to be committed to a team by the 30th, but the portal closes. No one could go back in. That's what I'm saying. So, yeah, I had stocked out on interior defensive line specifically, just didn't see any push there, really. And, I, you know, it could be more so that the offensive line was doing playing outstanding, which I think they played well. I don't think they were, you know, world beaters, but again, you're without Bear Alexander, you're without another big body interior defensive lineman, you don't have Rakes there, you might need at least 3 guys this portal window. You need at least 2. You don't have a 320 pounder. You will get Bear Alexander back, which will help, but you can't have a repeat situation where he's the only impact guy up front for you, and then it just becomes, all right, everyone beat the crap out of Bear, and the rest will fall into place because they don't have anyone else. So you need to go find some dudes in the next 2 weeks or so, because it wasn't a great showing for that interior defensive line in general.
Yeah, and you need a nose tackle for sure, but you need some difference makers. Like, and that's the thing, they're all getting gobbled up in the transfer portal because everyone needs them. That's the difference between a national championship defense and a defense that maybe can make a playoff, but, you know, especially now in the expanded playoff, but you're not going to be able to win the championship. And so can you get Demonic Williams? Is it Demonic or Dominic? Because Gerard's saying Dominic all the time, and I was like, Dominic. I don't think that it's Dominic. I always thought it was Demonic, but anyway.
He says That's what he says.
Okay. I prefer demonic better. I think it sounds cooler, especially for a defensive tackle. But can you get him? Can you get Toya? Can you get somebody? Like, you got to get, you got to go out and, yeah, you're going to have to overpay for, you know, what your needs are. Overpay what the market value is probably for someone like that. But that's supply and demand. That's the big thing. And nose tackles and defensive tackles in general, defensive difference makers are pretty rare right now. So I think they got to go get out and, you know, they got five scholarships left. I wouldn't be opposed to one wide receiver and four defensive front players, whether that's edge guys or it's nose tackles, whatever. And the guys are out there have been getting gobbled up pretty quickly. So you got to get on it. Any other stock down for you? I have one more.
I'd suck down on wristbands.
Oh, poor wristbands.
You know, I wonder if they're going to burn them all with the Pac-12 media vests. Yeah, you know, you didn't see a lot of this. Looking down, looking around, a visual bit, looking at my wrists, not paying attention. So, yeah, stock down on the wristbands. They're gone, and I know a lot of fans are rejoicing.
Yeah, and I don't have a problem with wristbands, but it was symbolic of the previous regime. So I think that that's more of the reason why USC fans are rejoicing there. My other stock down though, Chris, is on spring game takeaways. We just talked for, I don't know, 40 minutes or whatever, but really it's a spring game. It, you can't really make much of it. And really for us, it's hard to make as much as I would want to make out of it because we don't get to see practice. So you can't say, oh, leading up, now, we've seen clips of Marcellus Williams making plays, and we've heard positive things about it, but we haven't heard much about Xavier Jordan. He might have been making a ton of plays in practice, but because we didn't see it, we don't really know. So, you know, how much do you extrapolate from one practice? And that's basically what we're seeing here. You know, remember, I'm trying to think of who had three interceptions. There was a walk-on that had – Jalen Jones had three interceptions in one practice at one point. Like – do we take away that Jalen Jones is the next Adoree Jackson? No. It's one practice. So we can't take too much away from these, even though we've just talked about them for a lot. And there's some trends that we'll take from these, but we won't say that these are definitive things.
Referring to Josh Jackson?
No, I'm referring to Jalen Jones. A walk-on, we're number 38. He was actually smaller than Adoree Jackson. I think he probably came from Sarah as well. He and Adoree were good friends.
This is pre-me on the beat, I guess.
Three interceptions in a practice. It was a Coliseum practice, too. It may have even been a spring game where he had – yeah, I think he had an interception in a spring game, too, on a ball for Tyler Vaughn's. I don't know why these memories stick in my head. They just do, Chris.
Let's run through some quick transfer portal stuff before we go to a break and some questions. USC got their first transfer pickup of the portal spring portal window, and that is – the Florida State transfer, defensive back, Greedy Vance Jr. Such a great name for a cornerback / defensive back coming from Florida State.
Greedy.
Before that was at Louisville, played two seasons with Florida State, was a rotational player for them, but did start five times in last season for their undefeated, well, their partially undefeated season, getting snubbed for the college football playoff. ACC champions. He was in competition to be their starting nickel this spring, but opted to transfer. Saw him at the game on Saturday. Was having a good time with his dad and his coach. So Greedy Vance joining this already deep safety room, or this defensive back room, excuse me. And I didn't see defensive back being a need for them to spend a scholarship on for, but you know, they have more information than I do. Danson Lynn and Doug Belk and Lincoln Riley want to go get a defensive back. You got to trust them that they want to get defensive back. I think he graded out pretty well last season. I think 79 coverage grade. He has 71 tackles in his career. Was a co-leader in the ACC in interceptions 2 years ago. So he's got some playmaking ability. 5'11", not super huge, but he's a guy who can play cornerback or nickel or safety. But I expect him to jump into that nickel competition. Jalen Smith is coming back. I don't know what that means for Prophet Brown. They did have Traquan Fegans transfer out at the end of spring, so you bring in another body to replace him, and that's it looks like it's a big upgrade for them in that sense.
Yeah, if it's a one-for-one trade, you would say that's an upgrade as far as experience and playmaking ability there for Greedy Vance. But the real question is, does this mean someone's leaving? You know, should we anticipate that someone in that secondary is heading out? Coaching staff obviously knows this better and has a better feel on it. But that would be my inclination because, you know, why else is this someone you're targeting at this point? You know, even if he's on the outside, I feel like the depth's pretty good on the outside. And the fact that you have some versatile pieces like Prophet Brown and Jalen Smith that you can move into different areas. So it definitely an interesting one. And a guy that could come in and contribute right away for sure. But it also makes you kind of scratch your head of what else is happening. This feels like a pawn move where there's going to be another move coming after it.
In terms of other players or former Trojans finding new homes, Romello Height, the former edge rusher, is going back to his home state of Georgia, transferring to Georgia Tech. So happy for him. Obviously, just injury issues. Obviously decimated, or not decimated, but really limited him in his time as a Trojan. You know, one of the first players in that transfer, that initial transfer class for Lincoln Riley, had the shoulder injury, only played sparingly, re-injured in the Stanford game and never played another down. Was, you know, a rotational player last season, but Romello Height heading back to Georgia and Georgia Tech, which is, I think, is a good landing spot for him.
Yeah, hopefully he can get on the field and stay healthy. That's the biggest thing. I still think that he can be a productive player when giving playing time and if he can stay healthy. Isaiah Rakes is supposed to announce where he's going at probably by the time this podcast is up. It looks like maybe Auburn as a potential destination, you know, somewhere back to the South. So still haven't heard the backstory on what exactly happened there. I'm sure it will come out eventually, but that's a big loss for USC as well. But the area where USC needs players the most, the defensive front, is where they have two transfers that are finding their landing spots already.
Then let's pivot a little bit to basketball, since we have the world's best USC basketball beat writer in the world, and that is Shotgun Spratling. The Must Bus. The Must-Bus Shotgun is picking up some momentum here. They've gone on a little bit of a run. They have a lot of space to fill, but they've gotten hot on the recruiting trail as of recently, adding some commitments from Bryce Pope out of UC San Diego, Matt Noling out of Yale, and then St. Thomas, which is a great, great name, by the way, out of Northern Colorado, and trending for another prospect as well. So the Must-Bus rolling along, Shotgun, rolling along.
Yeah, I mean, they're training for some guys as well. You know, the Crystal Ball in for Boise State, Chibuzo Agbo. They're in the mix for UMass's Matt Cross and Utah State's Ian Martinez. Ian Martinez went to Jay Sarah, so this would be a return for him. Started at Utah, went to Maryland, I think, Chris, and then ended up at Utah State. So it'd be his fourth school in 4 years. Make of that what you will. He's actually a Puerto Rico native. I did a story on him when he was in high school. His dad is a coach. His dad was a coach with the Puerto Rican national team, I want to say, or just a, I would have to go look at the story again, but he was on the staff at Utah. That's how he ended up there to begin with. But he's an interesting player as well. All these guys can score. St. Thomas is probably the most interesting one. He's coming around Northern Colorado and you think, who comes out of Northern Colorado and does anything? That'd be Dalton Connect, who was the, you know, SEC player of the year this season for Tennessee, was Northern Colorado's leading scorer last year and made that big jump and was able to have a score. St. Thomas is a unique guy in the fact that he can shoot. He's also a big guy. He's, you know, I think he's 6'7", 6'8". I can't remember off the top of my head. But he's a unique piece. He's going to be a guy that you can build around. Now, Noling is, you know, was the leading scorer for Yale 2 years ago, and then Danny Wolf kind of emerged this year as their leading scorer. And so he's a guy that's only 6'6", but he can get rebounds, uses his thick body smartly to be able to. Bryce Pope was leading scorer for UC San Diego. You add in Clark Slackert, who was the leading scorer for Penn. You've got a couple of Ivy League kids. You got a Saint. You got a Pope. You could potentially get a Cross to add to that if Matt Cross from UMass adds to it. You also had Josh Cohen from UMass, was a previous commit for USC. So, you know, they're adding to it. And, you know, for a second, it looked like it was going to be an Ivy League roster. a lot of white guys, and then Matt Noling thrown in there as well, you know, an undersized, big. But now they're adding some athleticism, and St. Thomas is, like I said, a unique piece. Now we'll see where they go to continue adding pieces to it. Are these the guys you're building around, or are these the guys that are your secondary pieces to, you know, some other pieces that you have? Are you going to go find some younger guys now to complement that you can build around, or is this going to be a mercenary squad of all older guys for the first year, and then you build, you show? So I've talked with baseball coaches about this in the past. There's two ways to go about it. You take over a new job, basically. You know, you say you get a new roster. So must have a completely brand new blank slate. Some guys have some leftovers. Some guys run everyone off that they don't want, and then they have the blank slate. And there's two ways to build it up. You can go through the high school ranks, and it's going to take a couple years, or you can go straight mercenary and get a bunch of older transfers, and then you have to rebuild it the next year, right? But if you do that, then you can show that, you can show proof of concept. Hey, look, got some guys. This is what we're able to do. Now we add you to the mix, whether it be a high school guy or a transfer the next year, but you have that proof of concept so that you can build from there. And you may do mercenary the first year and then go, you know, start trying to build from the high school ranks after that. Because everyone ideally would like to build from the high school ranks, just because you're not having to go through team chemistry issues and all that type of stuff every single year and trying to build the culture. You want to have a core at least to build on every single year. And that you do that from the high school ranks.
And the last kind of note on this, not technically transfer portal, but Muss has filled out another spot on his coaching staff. That is Will Conroy, the former Washington assistant, if I remember correctly, mm-hmm. Shotgun.
Yes, longtime Washington assistant, had been up there with Jen Cohen. I'm sure that played into this. She has a relationship with him. I've been the athletic director over him, obviously. And I believe I have to check on this. He has connections to Los Angeles as well as the Seattle area. So he'll be able to recruit to Seattle area where there is generally some talent. But I believe he's also got some connections to Southern California. So that should help, in the recruiting of that area as well.
Shotgun, he played for the Los Angeles Clippers. I don't know if that's what you're thinking of.
That's not what I was thinking of. He played at Garfield High. And there's a Garfield High in Seattle, and there's one in Los Angeles. He played at the one in Seattle, then he played at Washington as well. But yeah, the fact that he played in LA, helps him out there. He's made a couple of stops along the way. But the main thing is, longtime assistant at Washington, was actually their associate head coach the last couple of seasons. But he recruited the Los Angeles area for Washington. So he knows the coaches and whatnot. So big pickup there. He was kind of intriguing free agent, with Mike Hopkins being fired. So it was going to be interesting to see where he was going to go. He's one of those assistant coaches whose name was in the mix for a couple different spots. So good to see him, must add him to go along with Anthony Ruda, who's a guy that's been with him for about 10 years now. He's kind of followed him stop to stop. His son, Michael Musselman, and then Todd, blanking on his last name, who was the head coach at one of the Dakotas, and they all blend together for me. And then took over a non-assistant coach staff job last year for Arkansas. And I think he's coming over to be an assistant coach at USC. So that's the staff so far. Obviously they'll continue to build that out with all the support staff and whatnot, but the pieces, the framework's starting to come together. The foundation is being built for this USC men's basketball team, and we'll see where they can go from there. The transfer portal is also going to be big on the women's side, just to touch on it real quick, because the big name out there is still out there. Kiki Iriafin, the Stanford post player. A lot of people are saying, I haven't heard this from any direct sources, that it seems like USC, UCLA, she want to potentially come back home to Southern California. But after Tara Vanderveer retired at Stanford, multiple players have gone to the portal. Kiki Iriafin is one of those, and she is an elite player. Probably she is the best player in the transfer portal. So USC is in the mix there, as well as in the mix for Talia von Ohlhofen, who coming from Oregon State, along with a couple other schools. She's kind of limited it, narrowed it down to probably Kentucky is the biggest threat there for USC. But getting both of those would fill out the roster as far as the scholarships they have remaining and would be huge additions. And Van Olhoffen, Talia Van Olhoffen, that name sounded a little bit familiar. Her dad was a former NFL player as well on NFL offensive lineman, I want to say, Kiki Van Olhoffen. So, you know, you got some good genetics there as well. And USC also is bringing in Doug Williams, the former Washington quarterback, his daughter, so Laura Williams. So you have some multiple NFL players, offspring on the roster as well.
All right, Shotgun, let's take a quick break. And then when we come back, we got to knock out a bunch of questions.
All right.
We'll be right back after this break.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast wherever you get your podcasts.
The chilling new original docuseries on Paramount Plus.
Why did he kill his family? The answer lies across the ocean and a woman named Sylvie.
She's a CAN model.
Where desire leads to deception.
I ended up spending $12,000 and $15,000 a day.
It was addictive.
I can't get you out.
And obsession leads to murder.
Who did this to your family?
You can't really maintain a fantasy forever.
Control Alt Desire. Now streaming on Paramount Plus.
All right, Shotty, we are back in action for the second half of this show, which is going to be strictly all questions. And we haven't really gotten a ton of questions the last couple times we've done this podcast, but today people came out in full force to send us some questions.
All right, I'm excited about it. We got some questions. We got some good ones on here. We got some not great ones on here. Those are the ones you can answer, Chris. But yeah, looking forward to it. And if I mess it up, I don't know if I said it correctly, but it's Kimo Van Olhoffen, just in case I said it incorrectly before.
I'm going to start with Blackie Chan Gaming, a very popular figure on USC Twitter. How many players do you anticipate USC adding in this transfer portal window, and at what position? So this is kind of like an overview kind of question, but as we said, USC has five scholarships. If we do the math on the paper, you know, one being taken by Greedy Vance. So five right now. I would anticipate at least another, maybe two more. So let's say they have seven to work with, seven scholarships remaining for the rest of the portal. I would say they need at least two defensive linemen, one being a big nose tackle. I think they could afford to take in two wide receivers to get them to nine, two wide receivers, an offensive lineman of some sort, a tackle, and maybe some specialists. You know, Lincoln Riley has said that they might be looking at more specialist help, aka a kicker, if there's an experienced kicker they want to address in here. You know, Shotgun shaking his head right now. He's saying no kickers. That would roughly, if we're not factoring the kicker I just mentioned, that would leave them with two. There's a little bit of room. Could even maybe spend another, make it three defensive linemen. I think that would be good. And it seems like they've been wanting to get another edge player as well. So that could be another avenue they go through.
If you're telling me we have seven, if that's the number, give me four defensive front players.
Okay.
At least two of them being nose tackles, because you need a starter and a backup right now. And then give me two receivers and one wild card. That could be probably offensive lineman. You know, if you can find a quality offensive lineman, get him to come in. And if not, then maybe running back. If not, then, you know, you start looking best available type of situation. Is there anyone that, you know, can come in and challenge for a starting job? You know, that's what I'd be looking at. But if I got seven, that's what I'm spending it on. If it's an open game like that.
Isaiah Rakes just committed to Auburn. Just committed to Auburn, shotgun.
I told you it was going to pop before this podcast was finished, or before this podcast was listened to by folks.
Tony Narcy has a question for the Helium Boys. Your thoughts on why we grabbed another DB in the pretty talented room? Are we missing something? I think we might be missing a little something, but again, as I mentioned, if Danson Lynn wanted this guy, if Doug Boak wanted this guy, Lincoln Riley wanted this guy, I think you have to trust that. And as Shotgun alluded to, there might be another departure in that room. I've heard that there might be another, you know, defensive back departure. So this might be guarding against that, but I think it's a solid pickup. I know DB wasn't high on our list of positions to potentially address, but you know, you, especially a guy who is experienced and, you know, has played for a championship team and has a lot of versatility. It's not like he's only valuable at one spot. You can play him at safety. You can play him at nickel. You can even play him at quarterback. So I think it's kind of like a 3-for-1 addition, and versatility is always something, you know, you can use on the defense, and something that Danson Lynn has addressed or spoken about as well. So if they wanted this guy, I think you got to trust that.
Yeah. And it's getting your own players in there. You know, we might like Prophet Brown and Jacoby Covington and think that they can be playmakers and Jalen Smith, but does the new coaching staff, or do they see deficiencies and they feel like Greedy Vance fills a better need than one of those guys? You know, that's becomes the inevitable question. Or is Marcellus Williams making some plays but also not making plays? And so they're saying he's not going to be ready. Again, this is the things we don't know because we don't get to watch all of practice. So we can only go off the highlights that we see. But I think that's the things that you're looking at. Or is there, hey, this guy's going to leave, and could it be somebody surprising? Like if Jalen Smith leaves or something like that, like Greedy Vance is a great pickup, right? So, you know, if you're losing someone that's potential starter, like Jacoby Covington decides that he wants to transfer or test the waters or whatever, you go, whoa, that Greedy Vance pickup was huge. And so maybe the coaches have an inclination that someone is going to leave. And so, you know, they're, you know, adding extra depth to pad and be safe against that.
Louis Schneider asks, why did nobody get gold plated this spring? I might be wrong, but I feel like they were doing gold plates in the spring, but I think that's going to be a fall thing. I think it's going to be strictly for the fall. And yeah, nobody had a gold plate. Every helmet was devoid of the Trojan decal. So it seems like it's going to be a strictly fall thing.
Actually, I heard Isaiah Rakes got gold plated, but you know, he didn't
participate.
And that's probably why, actually.
Good one.
Even if they've done it in the spring in the past, like you might say, like, the turnover is just ridiculous. Why are we going to do this whole gold plating thing if guys are going to end up leaving? So let's wait till the fall, then, you know, we'll have more guys be able to earn it then, type of thing. And we know who's going to be on the roster, type of thing then. But I think that plays into it.
Great point. Eric Carino asks, why do they schedule practices at 5:30 a.m.? That is so early. I honestly don't know, because I don't think we ever really asked about it. I think we've asked about earlier practices last year, and I think those were about 6:30. So I don't really have a good answer for you. Maybe it's getting prepped for the Big Ten season. They're going to have to be waking up earlier in general. But that doesn't even really make sense, because, you know, you waking up a couple times early in the spring isn't really going to affect you in the fall, I feel like. So that doesn't make any sense. I don't know. Build discipline. You know, there's nothing like the discipline of the sport, or any sport, of being, if you get up at 5 a.m. to run for a half marathon, you built that discipline in you, you know, getting ready to achieve this thing. So that's my best guess. That's my best guess, Shotgun.
There's different reasons why you can do it. One is discipline, like you mentioned. I think that's a great one. It's all right, we're going to teach, you got to be there on time. You got to prepare. Your preparation starts the day before. for a 5:30 a.m. practice because you have to eat earlier so that you can go to sleep earlier, so that you can get up earlier, all those type of things. So it's discipline. It's also disciplinary, I want to say. It's like you keep guys out of trouble. You can't be out to 2 a.m. on, you know, frat row if you got a 5:30 a.m. practice. You just can't. Your body can't handle that. I'm sure there's a player or two that's tried that. You can't be out with your girlfriend super late. Like, it builds in that discipline of football is the main thing. Keeping the main thing, right? And then the other thing is you see who really wants it. Like, who is willing to come out here and fight at 5:30 a.m. versus, especially in this transfer portal era, of this is the guy we need to talk about. You know what? Probably best. I think you'll get more playing time if you go somewhere else, and having that conversation with them. If they're dragging the whole time, you know, when the going's tough, or when you're doing things you don't want to, who still has a good attitude, or who's a shitty person to be around? Like, these are the things you want to know before you get into a game and the referees aren't making good calls for you, and you're in West Lafayette, Indiana, in the middle of a cornfield, basically. You know, you want to know who's going to still rise to the occasion. So I think those are the type of things you're challenging guys in a different way. And the biggest thing is you're just keeping guys out of trouble. And the last thing to throw in there is that you have class schedules. So you have less guys that are going to miss class or miss practice because of class, because in the fall, all your schedules are structured based on the football practice schedule. The spring, not so much. That's when they want you to go out and take more classes and, you know, be able to fulfill your academic requirements and stuff. And sometimes that requires, you know, classes that start at 2 o'clock and go to 5 or whatever it may be. So, you know, I think that partially is that too, is the timing, everything. For the coaching staff, you have a 5:30 a.m. practice, you're done by what time? 10? If you watch the tape immediately after, you can be done by 10. You spend the rest of the day recruiting, right? Or, you know, your other type stuff. You can have your meetings in the evening, all those.
I'm taking a nap shotgun.
Will you open up more of the day, though? Because 5:30 a.m. practices, the kids you're recruiting, you're not texting them at 5:30. So that time that, you know, you could be recruiting during the afternoon and on the phone and all those type of things, you can't do if you're at practice. So I think it just opens up some more opportunity, more time of the day for recruiting. It's kind of a dead time recruiting wise early in the morning. So I think it gives you an opportunity to have more time for recruiting if you choose to use it.
I'm recruiting the inside of my eyelids. That's what I'm recruiting. LA sports follower Josiah Zamora had some nice grabs. I know he's a walk-on, but may be used here and there, ? Shaw, is he in protective custody? Lafitte looks athletic. Could be a surprise. Thoughts on any of that? Zamora, yeah, he was, you know, really talented out of Modern Day playing for that program. I am never one to say, you know, a walk-on can't be a guy who can contribute, but I feel like unless they're really hit hard by injuries, we won't really see a ton of him, or if any. So I'm going to say, I think it's possible he could be used here and there, depending on how many wide receivers they grab out of the portal. If they grab two, probably not. If they only can get one, I think maybe you could see him here and there a couple times. But yeah, I wouldn't bank on him being a big part of the offense or any part of the offense in 2024. I'm assuming that's Bryson Shaw is the only Shaw I could think of. Is he in protective custody? I actually don't remember seeing Shaw a lot on the field. There were a couple.
He was with the
tackles.
Third team at times.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, that could be a spring departure guy. Just throwing it out there. You know, he's obviously moved down the depth chart a lot. So I would not be shocked if he ended up looking elsewhere. And maybe that's why Greedy Vance was brought in. We'll have to see. Dijon Lafitte, yeah, looked a little lost at times as shotgun man, but as mentioned, but Gerard has mentioned him as being like a dancing bear. You know, he's a big athletic guy, 6'2", 302 pounds, just needs more experience. Didn't really get any time last year. He was banged up. Could be a surprise. Yeah, I wouldn't bank on him being a significant help until maybe about midseason. Still needs to get some like grown man playing time against other grown men, not just a spring game. So that's my thoughts on Laffite, who I think is could be a really, really good player. He just needs more development, nor more game action.
Yeah, Bryson Shaw, like I said, I saw him on third string with some of those. So, you know, with Zion Branch coming back too, like how much is he actually going to get opportunities? You know, so maybe he's a guy that leaves. Zamora, USC's had so many good wide receivers that they haven't really had a walk-on even come close to sniffing any significant time, any real snaps since Christian Tober probably. And that was a decade ago. And he would have had a chance, but he got injured. So unfortunately, he never really got his opportunity either. Chris and I often will bet before the year how many snaps, how many catches any walk-on will get. You know, it's not happening very often. Zamora will be the guy who gets catches, though, you know, if USC actually blows some people out. So he would be a guy out there. He and Jaden Moore are both the walk-ons that are preferred walk-ons. So, you know, they would get a chance to be out there. But, you know, don't expect anything from him to be, you know, significant in the offense. And Laffite, for me, is, like I said, I didn't see him do much. So he's super raw to me. I know Gerard really liked him at Colony, but after you miss an entire season, he's super raw and he needs help.
Help. I need someone. Sorry. East Los Buddy asks, is it too early to call Linsanity era? Defensive renaissance, top 35 defense with growing pains spurts. I think it is too hard to call it the Linsanity era. I think you saw some good growth, some good potential, but I'm not remotely even ready to call top 35. They need some defensive tackles. We've been saying that all episode. They need some defensive tackles. If they get like three defensive tackles, we can talk about it a little bit more. But no, I can't say top 35 right now.
Yeah,
not even close to saying that right.
They created some turnovers and give them some give them some credit for that. The biggest thing to me, as I said in the open, was they played with more confidence. They were running around, they're flying around, seemed to know what they were doing. Those are all positive things for this defense, but still a long way to go.
Think about it. Think about how much better they would be in general if they play with confidence and knowing what they're supposed to do. That's like
such a great start. A
huge improvement, right? And tackling. You improve those three areas, not even in terms of like talent, you're going to make an improvement on defense.
And who knows if they can tackle? No one knows because they did this weird thuddish tackle thing. Like some guys were still tackling. Like I didn't completely baffled me. Like, oh, it's two-hand touch here, a little bit of thud here. And then suddenly it's like, oh, tackle him. I'm like, what? What are the rules here? I could not figure it out. Because there were some guys, some DBs, especially walk-ons or third string, I mean, not walk-ons, but second or third string guys that went for full tackles. And then everyone else is just like barely two-hand touch, or there's a mix of everything in there. So I didn't understand that at all, Chris.
I'm tackling everyone shotgun because I'm not getting yelled at by my coach. I'm just tackling whatever. You come in my way, I'm tackling you. The ref gets in my way, I'm tackling him too.
One way to do it.
Gustavo asked, we normally talk about young players, young guys breaking out. Who do you think the upperclassmen could be to have a big year? Also, who are a couple senior X factors for this team? It's an interesting question. Upperclassmen, I think Mason Murphy is a good potential guy to break out. You know, he's a guy who's been inconsistent, has starting experience, though, has bounced around, looking to really take hold of a spot, right tackle. This could be the year. I think he started as a right tackle early before going to left and then going to guard. So if he makes that jump in his game, you know, as I mentioned, consistency has been an issue for him. USC will be in a much, much better place. So that's a guy off the top of my head that could be a breakout upperclassman, if you will.
The first guy I thought of was Anthony Beavers. And again, this comes down to how he's used and whatnot. And then I start thinking, okay, we're talking about how he used. What about a breakout for Eric Gentry? You know, we think he can do amazing things. We've seen flashes of it. Didn't get put in the best spots in the past. Can they put him in the best spots this year? He's a guy. And the last one that I would bring up is Jacoby Covington. you know, just a guy that's been banged up and, you know, had the serious hamstring injury last year that, you know, basically cost him the majority of the season when he was about to take over or had just taken over the starting spot. So he's another guy that I think can have a breakout year.
Name I'll throw out there, Rajon Davis is obviously a guy who USC has been begging for to like break out and get more playing time. Again, it's going to be a tall task this year because there's some veteran guys in there already and he missed time in the spring. So he's already off to not a great start, you know, with those hand wrist injuries this spring. But again, this is the guy that has been a fan favorite for a while and a guy like play this guy more. He's in that category. I would say Kobe Pepe, Richard Sr., you know, a big defensive tackle, shotgun shaking his head at me. Mm-hmm. You know, a guy who was actually in the transfer portal at one point and then like just never left and has still remained on the team. So he's actually started the spring game, if I remember correctly, alongside Nate Clifton at that defensive tackle position. 310 pounds, you know, maybe it's just the body or whatever. But Kobe Pepe is a guy who's been on this roster a long time, hasn't really played a ton, but, you know, maybe this year, I don't know. I'm just throwing out redshirt freshman. Not a lot of great options because there's a lot of standout guys who I wouldn't even consider like X factors, like Woody Marks, obviously. Keely Arnold, those guys are new, but these guys are guys who are going to play a lot of snaps for USC. Emmanuel Pregnon's a senior, but again, he was starting. Gino Quinones is an interesting name because he's coming back from injury. He will be in that right guard competition. Didn't get his full shot last year after, you know, the season-ending injury, but, you know, don't be shocked. I wouldn't be shocked if he, you know, won that starting guard spot and ended up starting the season. But again, he's got to come back from that injury. He was rehabbing all spring, but, you know, redshirt senior, maybe this is his year to start for one season and hold on to it and be healthy.
Yeah, I mean, I don't see Kobe Pepe being the answer in the middle, which is why I think they need to go get bodies. Rajon Davis, I just think there's other guys in front of him that they like more. So that Mason Cobb with a bounce back year, it's not really a breakout year, but if he can cut down the missed tackle rate, like that's been an issue for him at Oklahoma State when he had 100 tackles. It was an issue for him last year. That's still a growing concern for me, or not a growing concern, a big concern for me. But he's a potential for a bounce back. And then the other guy that I think could still have a breakout year is Jalen Smith. He's still so young. I mean, he's younger than anyone we've talked about now. He's a senior. I think he finally turned 21, or he turns 21 this year. Like, he's super young. He showed those flashes last year, and, you know, if he's healthy in the fall in this defense, I think they'll find a way to help him make plays too. So he could take another step forward in his game, and maybe the Holiday Bowl becomes, you know, kind of the expected performance for him.
Rocco, we have two more USC questions before we get to some off the wall ones. USC seems less active in the transfer portal offers and visits. Are they missing on guys, underbidding, or are they that confident in the current roster? Seems different the last two cycles of the transfers. Yeah, I mean, you have to remember transfer portal recruiting is like super weird. It doesn't follow the same physics of high school recruiting. These guys aren't putting out all their offers. A lot of it's already been back communicated, quote unquote, tampering. You're always having those conversations behind the scenes, if you will. They're not putting out those offers. They want to get this over quick. They're not really announcing their visits. They're just going on visits, committing on the spot, usually their first visit. It's like that. I think they are kind of missing on some guys, but again, the whole gravity of transfer portal recruiting is very different to that of high school recruiting. So it's a little bit weird. You can't really see everything on the surface. It needs to be it's deeper than that. It's like the iceberg or the duck. You know, you see the duck on the surface, he's very calm, but underneath everything's going crazy. So that's kind of what transfer portal recruiting in general, but transfer portal recruiting even more so. So just because a guy hasn't posted his offer does not mean USC has reached out and had contact or even offered him. So just keep that in mind. I do think they're missing a little bit on some guys, but again, I don't take everything at face value, what you see on social media.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Dan's second question is, the interior offensive line either played great or the interior of the defensive line was awful, or both on Saturday. What is your analysis of the SC offense consistently blowing out the interior D line off the ball. I think we kind of mentioned this in Stock Down, but just like they didn't really have any impact guys on the interior. They didn't have Bear Alexander. They didn't have your Isaiah Riggs. You didn't have another really impact guy that popped on Saturday. And I think the interior of the offensive line was able to capitalize that and look better than I think better than maybe they are. I'm not saying they're not good. I'm just saying I think they just had a nice little tasty opponent with a weakened interior defensive line. And they were able to look a little bit better against that front.
Yeah, I'm not excited about anything there. The offensive line did what it was supposed to. The defensive line needs help, but nothing that really was like, oh, this could be, you know, this could be something.
All right, Chaka, let's run through some off-the-wall questions. Off-the-wall, Big Ten away game tailgate you're looking forward to?
All of them, just because it's new experiences and stuff. But I actually took this as the away game tailgate food. I misread this, my fault, Anthony. Oh. But I misread it to be the food I'm looking for. So I'm like, all right, what's the cultural, the regional cuisines of these places? And all right, I got to see what the cheese curds are like at Wisconsin, right? That's the one I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, give me some cheese curds. Excuse me. I've actually never had a cheese curd, so I'm excited. Neither.
That's why.
Excuse me. I'm excited to lose my cheese curd virginity in Wisconsin. I'll say Michigan just because of the big house and just that atmosphere in Michigan. I feel like they know how to party and they're coming off a national championship. So they should be extra tilted. Should be extra tilted. So I think that'll be fun. And then
Big Ten personally, opener too.
Big Ten opener. I think personally for me, the nostalgia of a Maryland tailgate.
Because
I used to go to tailgating. I used to go to tailgating all the time at Maryland games. So I just want to walk through the parking lot and feel that energy again and feel to be 11 years old again, playing pickup football in the aisles with my brother. So that's a little different, but my true real answer would be Michigan.
The Maryland one's going to be interesting just because it's going to be the homecoming for Chris and we're going to parade him around. But the other one, low key one, is I think you fly into Omaha to go to Lincoln. It's like 45 minutes away. Lincoln maybe has his own airports. You should fly into Omaha and go for the steak. Omaha, because that's where the College World Series is. So many delicious steakhouses. There's also some other really good spots that I will recommend to people when we eventually go to cover a game in Nebraska. But that's another sneaky one as well.
De La Cruz asks, off the wall, what kind of taco would each peristyle member be? Does Chris and Gerard get cilantro? Yeah, just a straight cilantro taco. Just a straight cilantro taco. I would be a carne asada taco. I'm not sure about Gerard, and I don't know about shotguns. I just know it would not have onions in it.
No, that would not. So, again, I interpreted this differently than you. This is which kind of taco would each of us be, not each one of us eat. So if I'm eating, I eat a bunch of different ones, you know. But I label this out, Chris. I got this. Ryan,
okay.
All right, you ready? Ryan would be the carne asada because it's what everyone recognizes. The hello, Trojan fans. So carne asada is the most recognizable, you know, taco in my opinion. Connor would be probably chicken. It's versatile. It's consistent. You know, he does basketball, does women's basketball, football, recruiting, does a little bit of everything for us, right? Gerard's going to be lingua. No doubt.
Yeah.
It's the tongue.
The mouth. He talks a lot.
Self-explanatory.
It's beautiful. Beautiful.
Chris, Tripe, you know, the guts. Some intestines. Chris is the guts of the site. He does a little bit of everything for us. You know, he's always putting up the top 10 list. You know, he does the instant analysis. He does the ghost note. He does everything. He's the guts of the site. Is there a veal taco? Like, what is the baby version of a taco?
Baby version?
Because that would be Jack. You know, so if there's a veal taco, Jack would be that. You know, because it's a baby calf. RJ would be a fish taco. Because it pairs well with wine and a Stanford education, you know. So RJ nice. Being the Stanford educated kid would be the fish taco. And then JP, you know what the five-star taco is, right? Al Pastor is the five-star taco. There's no beating the Al Pastor, a good Al Pastor taco. So JP five stars, it would be Al Pastor. And then if we're throwing Dan in there, it'd be like some, you know, if there's an aged beef in there somewhere.
Did you do it yourself?
No, I'm not doing it myself. That's for you to do.
Okay, I got to think of that then. And the tripe one, I like it. It's also the weirdest one. So that's that also works in my favor.
What do you mean? It's just weird because it's a weird meat or?
Weird meat.
No.
It's a weird meat. I know tongue is weird too, but.
I get tongue all the time, so. Doesn't seem weird.
Someone clip that. I get tongue all the time. Can someone clip that? Blackie Chen asks, off the wall. Again, these are all off the wall, but this one's kind of not off the wall. This is kind of like strictly in the wall of USC. Since we brought BMW, Big Mike Williams, on staff, any chance we can get maybe bring Pete Carroll back on staff like Mike? I know this will be a popular offseason question, like bring Pete Carroll back. He's not doing anything. He's not doing anything.
He's hanging out with the Washington program with Jed Fish.
Yeah. They're like, no, bring him back here. I think if he's willing to like hang out with a college program like Washington, you know, obviously he's in the Seattle area. He's kind of ingrained there. I could see him maybe coming back to take a chill role, but as of right now, I don't think that's going to happen. If you're banking on it, like, oh, Pete Carroll back on staff this year. Yeah, I don't think that's going to happen. But I could see it at some point. But right now, no.
Yeah, I mean, everyone wants to be like Mike, right? Like the old Gatorade commercial, but probably not Pete Carroll right now. So I think he still has a house in Manhattan Beach, I'm guessing. He has enough money, so he could do that. Then maybe you could talk him into it, but probably not happening.
Probably not happening. And our final off-the-wall question, if you could be any fictional character for a day, who would you be and why? Interesting.
I don't know, Chris. The first thought is, oh, you want to be a superhero or something, right? But, like, I don't want that chance of injury. I want to help people and whatnot, but I don't want to be – I want to have some superhero abilities, but I don't actually have to go fight against some of these super villains. Come on.
You can't save someone for a day, Shotgun. For a day?
No, I'm fine with that, but I don't have that skill set, so I don't know if I'm going to get injured doing this. I might pull a hamstring.
I'm going to be James Bond.
Oh, that's a good one. That's good. Spies.
I'm going to be James Bond. Hope it's an off day for him, and I don't take over his body in the middle of some important mission. I could just like chill in my very fancy loft, probably beautiful women all around. I can shoot tequila like a normal person, and I get to drive a cool little car with some fancy gadgets. Yeah, I'd be James Bond for the day.
All right. So if I'm not being a superhero per se, I'm going to go with Captain Planet. Because, Chris, with your powers combined, I am Captain Planet. I'm going to save the environment.
That's a great poll. I watched Captain Planet all the time growing up. So that's a great poll and generally made me giggle.
So I'm going to take down bad guys that are looting and corroding. Or whatever the saying was.
Okay, I have your taco for what you are before I get to our final part. You are a barbacoa taco.
I thought you might go
now there. Because for one, barbacoa is such a fun word to say, like shotgun. So I think that works. And barbacoa is obviously a staple. It's hearty. You know, it's a slow cook type of meat. And you're a slow cook kind of guy in terms of, you know, you do these in detail reports on breakdowns. You're right a lot. That takes time. That takes effort. That takes an eye for detail. So I think barbacoa requires that from someone. They require that patience. And you require patience as an editor for this crazy asylum that is the peristyle. So barbacoa is my choice for you. in your taco shotgun? I know onions are a popular topping for any taco and barbacoa, but we won't put onions on your barbacoa taco. No onions for the barbacoa man.
No onions here. But I will take the cilantro.
We'll take the cilantro. Of course, our final thing is a shout out. I promise that if anyone bought a Helium Boys piece of merch with our face on it from the peristyleshop.com, you can go there now and get it for this summer or this season. Gonna have to do a season sale going into the 2024 campaign. Gonna get that going. But I promise anyone who bought a piece of our merch would get a shout out at the end of this podcast. And apparently I missed somebody because Danny, aka Fight_On_4_God, said, could you let Chris Trevino know that I bought the shirt back in January but got no shout out? It be your own cilantro people. I cannot believe I let down a fellow cilantro boy, but possibly this is one that slipped through my fingertips in that period where we weren't doing podcasts after the Holiday Bowl. Perhaps I apologize, Danny, and I said I would give you a shout out. So I'm got to give you a special shout out because if anyone recalls what I would say to Shotgun, I would say nice things about you. Nice things about you. Mm-hmm. So for nice things about Danny, this guy probably has the sickest memorabilia and jersey collection of all time. And I know this guy knows how to get a good deal. If you look at his Twitter profile, he is out there hustling for some merch for all these different USC stuff. And I think he's a big Falcons fan, Shotgun. Just looking at his stuff, I think he's a big Falcons fan trying to get those, you know, when they do retweet for a chance to win this item, this signed mm-hmm. helmet, this signed jersey. That's all his Twitter is. So this guy must have a great memorabilia collection or a great jersey collection on him. And I know he's got a great Helium Boys t-shirt on him. So I'm hoping I can see that this season. Danny, thank you so much. I apologize for the delay in giving you this shout out. I hope it was worth it. But thank you so much for buying our dumb faces to put on your body. Like, think about that. You're putting our faces on your body. That's like the dumbest thing you can do. But we appreciate it so much. And I appreciate you, Danny. And I appreciate anyone who has purchased a Helium Boys piece of merch. And again, theparastyleshop.com. You can get it. We're going to have a sale before the start of the season. So you can link up with some merch going into 2024 Big Ten season, baby.
Yeah, maybe we'll get some new designs before then as well. Ooh, who knows? Chris, I bet he also has some fresh white Vans as well. And then I wanted to point out that you can't win if you don't enter. Every contest, you can't win if you don't enter. So you got to retweet it. You got to throw your name in there. You got to fill out a form. I've won some random contests that way. I won tickets to the national championship. The terrible, LSU Alabama national championship, but had so much fun because it was in New Orleans. And how can you not have fun in New Orleans? So got a free trip, free hotel stay, free monies, free tickets. It was awesome. But that's all because they entered. Can't win if you don't enter.
You and Daddy know how to get a good deal. So it takes one to know one. So deal hunters, Shotgun and Danny.
Chris, I got one more thing. I saw this random tweet. The USC's on the Big Ten Network. They're doing some segments and stuff. The opponent rotations were officially set for volleyball like a couple weeks ago, maybe last month or something, maybe 2 months ago. But I just want to point this out because people talk about the travel for football. Hey, you're going to go to Minnesota. If you travel to every USC game this year, you go to Minnesota, Michigan, Maryland. Three trips. Not the worst thing. The women's volleyball team is going to be traveling to Illinois, Indiana, Maryland, Nebraska, Northwestern, Purdue, and Rutgers. That's seven trips. So when people talk about the travel with this new conference, this is the things I was thinking about. The baseball team, the volleyball teams, the soccer teams. How are these sports going to handle this different travel, the differences in travel versus going across? You also play, they'll play home and away with UCLA, Washington, Oregon. But a set of the Big Ten, they're only going to play home, and a set, they're only going to play away. But that's seven road trips to the East, along with going to Washington, Oregon, which is a decent flight. I was just came back from the Pacific Northwest last weekend, and, you know, I was traveling. I was actually with the UCLA baseball team in the airport, and I talked with USC baseball team when they were going to the airport. So, like, those are Austin O'Vern. We talked to him last week on the Dado Download. They got back at like 12:30. So it's not like these are 30-minute trips. It's taking up the entirety of a day type of thing. So when you travel to Purdue and to Rutgers and Northwestern, like, these are going to just be that much longer. So it's going to be a unique travel thing when we get into the fall and see how it affects not only football, but the other sports as well. Just wanted to point that out. This tweet caught my eye, and just, I was like, whoa, seven trips to the East Coast. That's going to be something unique for the volleyball team next year.
Yeah, definitely. I hope those planes are comfy and you can get some homework done on the plane, because
true,
that is going to be a long plane ride accumulating over the time. And yeah, if you're going to be in the plane, hopefully you can get some work done, be productive, sitting around or watch a movie or something. So it's definitely going to be interesting to see how this affects, you know, other sports, ones that aren't flying charter planes throughout the season.
And also performance, because all that travel wears you down. Now, we may not see it in football, but don't be surprised. And maybe we do see it in football, but don't be surprised if the number of upsets kind of increases as this coast-to-coast conference type stuff builds more and more. So I think that it's just going to have an impact that is going to be overlooked. You go, how could they lose to this? And you start thinking, you go, they've flown 9,000 miles in the last 3 weeks. So maybe that has something to do with it. I don't know. Just something to keep in mind as we move into this new generation in a little over 2 months, when USC officially moves into the Big Ten on July 1st.
Shotgun, that is going to wrap up a very important and lengthy Helium Boys podcast, a non-serious USC podcast, talking about the spring game. And we kind of get kind of a break moving forward. USC will be doing a lot of recruiting over the next several months, but Shotgun, before we know it, we're going to be back here for fall camp. We got to do our top 30 most important list. We got I've been teasing it. This podcast, I want to do this special podcast where we play a game the entire time. I'm excited for that, for a season preview, overall season preview. So I'm excited for that. And then before you know it, we're going to be back in the season. We're going to be in Las Vegas, LSU Tigers, USC Trojans. Let's see what happens. So it'll be here before you know it, UC fans. So we won't be gone long.
Yeah, it'll be interesting. It's going to be a unique season for sure, with all the new locations and starting the season in Vegas for LSU. Looking forward to it. That's going to wrap it up for the spring though, Chris. Now it's all about the transfer portal. It's officially all about transfer portal season. And, you know, who goes in the next 9 days and who ends up landing at USC? We'll be back at some point in this offseason to pick up the pieces on all the transfer portal stuff. And breaking news, it looks like USC men's basketball just picked up another commit. We'll talk about that on another show. But, they're adding to their roster. That's going to be interesting too. But like I said, transfer portal season.
I'm Chris, that's Shotgun. We will catch you next time on Helium Boys.